U.S. Supreme Court decision granting constitutional rights to business corporations. The event features a photography exhibit, trivia, conversation, and presentations about how we can reclaim people's constitutional rights and dismantle corporate rights. Again, that's Roasting 200 Years of Corporate Constitutional Rights on Thursday, February 28th from 6 to 9 p.m. This is a drop-in event happening at the Just Bob Cafe, 2403 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, February 25th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Cry Freedom, where South African journalist Donald Woods is forced to flee the country after attempting to investigate the death in custody of his friend, the black activist Steve Biko. Again, that's Cry Freedom, showing Monday, February 25th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's 7 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Her guests are Olivia Pace and AJ Mendoza, speaking about this week's City of Portland listening session about Portland police reform. We're just going to jump right in. Stay tuned.
This episode of The Struggle is being pre-recorded. I'm in the studio live with Olivia Pace and AJ Mendoza. Olivia Pace is one of the leaders of the Disarm PSU movement at Portland State University and a longtime leader in the Portland State University Student Union, as well as a member of Don't Shoot Portland. AJ Mendoza is on staff at Portland Jobs with Justice and is a dedicated member of the Communications Workers of America. They both were speaking at a rally that was hosted by the Portland Democratic Socialists of America. The point of the rally was to bring people together who had planned on going to the listening session hosted by my mayor and yours, Ted Wheeler. Ted Wheeler is under fire right now because of a Lieutenant Nyack, who was liaisoning with Joey Gibson of the famous or infamous, depending on your political orientation, Patriot Prayer group, because of, as they explain it, safety reasons. But all of the listeners really should listen to the reporting in the Portland Mercury and in the Willamette Week that lay out all of the revealed text messages between the lieutenant and the right-wing leader. Ted Wheeler is being asked by the Portland Democratic Socialists of America, as well as many other endorsing organizations that were at the pre-rally of the listening session, to call on the mayor to pass over the police commissioner position that he holds on to now and to give it to Commissioner Joanne Hardesty, the city councilwoman who is on track to perhaps be the new police commissioner. Yes, Joanne Hardesty used to have a show here on KBOO. She's part of the KBOO family. And she was the president of the Portland NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. She has been a longtime critic of policing strategies, tactics, policies in Portland for many, many years. She was also a member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance for Justice and Police Reform. She's been featured in many articles and documentaries. And I suggest that if you don't already know who she is, get to know your city councilor. So the call is to give over the police commission position to Joanne, as people are betting that she would do a better job at it than Mayor Wheeler. Two of those people are with me in the studio today. Olivia Pace, hi.
Hi.
And AJ Mendoza.
Hey, Alyssa.
So both of you spoke at the pre-rally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you both could say a little bit about what your message was to the crowd, that would be excellent.
Okay. So hi, my name is Olivia Pace. I'm so happy to be here on The Struggle. I spoke at the pre-rally right before heading in to the listening session. And what I wanted to communicate really was just that while we fight for these kind of incremental demands that we know will mitigate the oppressive and violent conditions that we're under, mitigate the impact of those conditions, we need to keep in mind the long-term goal, right? Which should be, in my view, to abolish policing. Policing has its roots inherently in racism, right? The first iteration of policing in the United States was to control the bodies of slaves who were attempting to run away. And if we look at the various policies that have affected Black people and all people of color since the abolishing of slavery, we understand that they have only served to oppress us through means of housing, of other kinds of economic oppression, through segregation, through a variety of means. And so policing comes from that history, and so policing is inherently violent. And rather than keeping people safe, it acts as a tool of the state, of their interest, to protect property and to protect wealth. And so if you share that view with me, and I would encourage you to do some research if you don't, then you would understand that we must abolish policing. We need mechanisms in our society to keep people safe, but those can be done without the violence that policing has, without the monopoly on violence that police officers have, and without inherently protecting the interests of the state, because the state oversees the police. That's how policing is set up, and that should not be the way that community safety is set up.
Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
I want to circle back to some of the themes that you hit. But AJ, if you can bring in a bit of the message that you brought to the rally.
Sure. First, oh my gosh, I'm on The Struggle.
So congratulations.
So happy about this. And what felt near the surface and important for me to say today at the rally was to sort of to take that position that the labor movement must see itself as necessarily opposed to fascism. Like, to not do that, it's like setting ourselves up for what happened before. There's this incredible, like, bit of history that I've not done as much research on until this year, where all of Germany's labor unions during in 1939 or 1937, they were all invited to this big rally by the Nazis, all killed on the same night.
Say that again.
I know, it's kind of amazing, because they didn't see this like, oh, sure, maybe we can appease and appease and appease. Mm-hmm. And then he invited to a celebration of German labor.
Mm-hmm.
This is an amazing rabbit trail, but
Jesus.
The payoff is, so they all get drunk, and then that night, the Nazis go to all the union halls, and the Germany that had that night before 150 labor unions, international unions present in it, woke up with a new Nazi-provided union called the German Labor Front. All former members had the option to join this new fascist union.
Mm-hmm.
And
those were air quotes for
yeah.
the listeners.
The air quotes were strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that is this amazing, I think, lesson this is a part of the labor movement that needs to be told. Like, fascists need to be understood as not compatible. Like, they want us dead.
Enemies of labor.
They want solidarity to not be a thing, because it kind of goes against the whole, like, mm-hmm. like, let's stoke the fear, let's dominate each other in the systems that they depend on. Mm-hmm. And it's just like that idea of appeasing it, like, oh, like we have a police union and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like,
let's talk about the police union, actually. Can you talk about the activism around hopefully getting police unions out of the AFL-CIO, the American Federation of Labor, and the Congress of Industrial Organizations, the umbrella group that most labor unions affiliate to in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I need to be, like, specific about making sure I'm representing myself just as, like, my own.
Yeah. Well, I'm just asking for sort of what the struggle looks like.
Right. I think it's for myself, where there's been a, what police unions have made clear to me is a distinction between what a union is and what the labor movement is. Like, are police unions in that they are exclusive bargaining representatives and enforcing a contract that benefits their members? Yes. Do they see an injury to one as an injury to all and have a vision of the working class? No. Mm. You cannot murder black and brown people with impunity and claim to be part of the labor movement. Mm. It's like oil and water. You just can't. Like, you can't make those things mesh. At least in my, like, personal, and that's why I'm, like, also a proud dues pay member of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World.
The Industrial Workers of the World.
Do not affiliate with COPS.
Famously, one of the most bold unions 100 years ago that recognized police as being the enemy of labor, citing their roles in breaking strikes and providing safety for scabs or people that would come in and do the jobs of striking workers, or sometimes not even striking workers, just workers who had fought for a contract and had won it, and the boss decided that they didn't want to acknowledge it anymore, so you bring in scabs. And then the police time and time again were helping the scabs to get to where they needed to go, and yet these are also union members.
Yeah. Lowercase u.
Follow that up to just a few years ago, your union, CWA, was leading strikes against Verizon. And one of the most telling moments of that strike for me was a moment in Queens, New York City. And there were striking workers who were there trying to hold the picket line, keep the scabs from coming and doing their jobs. Verizon was trying to, in a mad dash, hire people to come on and do the skilled work that their technicians had done. Mm-hmm. And when the police were trying to break through their picket line to bring in scabs, one of the members, who I don't know him, I don't know his name, I don't know his history, but what I do know is that he looked absolutely shocked and heartbroken that police officers, who I assume he had good feelings about previously, right? His shock was very clear, and he looked on to the police officer and said, "How could you do this? You union members." You know, old school New York City Italian, right? And he was so blown away that the police were doing this because they're union members. And I think that was a hard lesson for him. And I don't know who you are, sir, but I know a lesson, a crash course, when I see one. And you got one.
Gosh, that moment of having to confront that. Oh, like every worker deserves a contract. It's like, well,
do they though?
Shall we define, are cops workers?
Right. Yeah. It's a question.
No.
So the struggle continues. I applaud all members in the AFL-CIO that are carrying this forward, trying to get resolutions passed, and you know, their locals and in their states. And you know, we'll see if Richard Trumka, the president of the AFL-CIO, will budge it all. I won't hold my breath, but we'll all be watching. So, Olivia, one of the things that you brought up that I want to circle back to is the question of abolishing the police. Mm-hmm. And something that I want us to be honest about is where most people are at.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that when most people hear us say abolish the police, mm-hmm. what they immediately imagine is something like the purge,
mm-hmm.
right? Where there is just violence abound,
yes.
and no one to stop the violence.
Yes.
And to aspire to safety is a perfectly fine, logical, good mm-hmm. thing to aspire to. But something that I feel, and please correct me if I don't finish a thought or don't hit a point mm-hmm. To your satisfaction, is that the other part of saying we want to abolish the police that often doesn't get spoken is that what we want to do is to build strong communities
mm-hmm.
so that the police become obsolete.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is something that doesn't always get brought to the forefront, if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and that was something, you're absolutely right, and that was something that I tried to bring in today is to highlight, you know, the violence that does occur in our society, right? We do not live, it's not as if society is inherently safe and police are kind of this outside force that just happened to exist that have tricked people into believing that they need to be kept safe. People are murdered, people are raped, people experience all kinds of violence, but they also experience that kind of violence at the hands of the police. And what we have been tricked into believing falsehoods about why certain crimes or things that have been deemed crimes occur. I feel like we're kind of taught that society is just inherently unsafe. There are bad people in the world and there are good people in the world. And luckily we have police officers to stop the bad people from doing bad. Mm-hmm. But it's much more complicated than that. And as AJ has begun to point out, right, that police are part of this system that creates all of this violence. You have things that are deemed crimes, but should not be deemed crimes, right? Crimes of poverty. Stealing small amounts of food, stealing small things, sleeping on the sidewalk, sitting on the sidewalk, going to the bathroom outside, mm-hmm. things that have been deemed crimes. Mm-hmm. But if we actually addressed things like poverty, the fact that we don't have rent control or many rights for people who rent housing to allow them to maintain their housing and other policies like that, if we were to develop policies and solutions to poverty, to people being displaced and to people having little opportunity to take care of themselves, we would eliminate those crimes of poverty, things that have been deemed crimes. And mm-hmm. so rather than actually addressing poverty and creating opportunities for people to take care of themselves and have their basic needs met, the police come in and arrest them and fine them or throw them in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Which just doesn't take much thinking about it to realize that is ridiculous, yeah. to throw somebody in jail
right.
for doing something like sleeping on the sidewalk yeah. or going to the bathroom outside.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have things that are legitimate concerns of our safety. People, there are murderers, there are people who rape people, there are people who do violence against people. Right mm-hmm. now, Patriot Prayer, ironically enough, the people who Portland police are talking so friendly to,
mm-hmm.
are people who are like
them. Of
course
this is alleged. Yeah. We should just say that.
Allegedly
yeah.
are going
yeah.
through the streets of our city
yeah.
and brutalizing LGBTQ mm-hmm. people. There are legit.
I should be clear, I believe that they are.
Yeah.
It's also important though for cable's sake that we say allegedly. That it is alleged.
So I'm saying that it is alleged.
But we believe it.
Does it count if you keep saying that you believe it?
I think it's an important addendum.
KBOO says allegedly. I personally, as a guest on KBOO, absolutely believe that there are those the people responsible. And so there are legitimate safety concerns. But I don't think the solution is to lock people up for mm-hmm. those things
mm-hmm.
And to create this kind of dichotomy of good people and mm-hmm. bad people
mm-hmm.
for a multitude of reasons. The first being that we have to understand that the system that we live under, capitalism, which benefits wealth, property, and those who have it above people who create wealth, workers, right? The people that AJ...
Privileges, not benefits.
Privileges.
Yeah.
Privileges those with wealth and property yeah. above people who create that wealth and property, the workers who AJ represents.
Thank you, AJ.
Thank you, AJ. That system, it's laid out within it, is inherently violent. And so why would it foster healthy people? Why would it create healthy people with healthy mindsets? And it creates desperation and opens the gates for ideologies like racism, mm-hmm. like white supremacy, that inspire people and empower people to do violence. Mm-hmm. And so this dichotomy of good and bad, there are people who I really believe that everybody in this world is trying to do their best. I truly believe that. But our society does not inspire that. Our society does not power that. And so you have people who come into this world innocently and become poisoned by these various ideologies that encourage you to do violence. And that's not to say that those people should not be held responsible for what they do, but we should not have this idea that our society is healthy and that there just happen to be these bad people. It's not a video game, right? Like, we are bombarded by different ideologies and ideas that teach us to be violent, that teach us to do things that are bad and do not help the people around us. Mm-hmm. And the solution to that is not throwing people into prison. The solution to that is not having this armed force that has a monopoly over violence. The people who are trying to foster safety in our communities should not be able to kill people with impunity and generally get away with it. We need community-based solutions to these problems. And that first means fostering positivity through providing people with their basic needs, through creating community supports, feeding people, housing people. And we do need to be fighting for that institutionally. We do need to be aiming at the institutions that take those basic rights away from us and deprive us of things that we need, like housing and food and water, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But we also need to be fostering that within our own communities. And there are a lot of groups in our city that are doing that kind of work, like Care Not Cops and Critical Resistance, which endeavor to create a more positive vision for our society, mm-hmm. with the aim of making our communities and society strong enough to make policing obsolete.
Right. So, yeah. Thank you for clearing that up. I hope that listeners have a broader and better view of where activists are coming from when they say that they want to abolish the police, that it's not that they want to abolish the police and leave everything else intact. The point is that we want to transform things to the point that the policing as we know it is no longer needed.
And I think what I said spoke to this, but just to emphasize it, the fight to abolish police is nothing without a fight to abolish capitalism, right? Mm-hmm. We have to... It's not by itself. Like, this is part of a larger struggle to create a society where people's basic needs are valued.
Thank you. So I've had an episode that was called Anti-Fascism 101 with Alexander Reed Ross and Shane Burley that I suggest that listeners go into the archives on kboo.fm and look at again. Also on my YouTube page, Alyssa Pariah on YouTube. And I think what you will learn, first of all, you will learn a lot because they are experts in the field, if you want to call sort of ideological anti-fascism a field. It should be, but universities are not clamoring to help people devise ideas and theories to fight the right, surprisingly enough. But one of the things that they bring in is that groups like the Patriot Prayer, they are not homogenous in their worldview, and that while there are ideological fascists in the group, Nazis, white supremacists, white nationalists, anti-feminist, which is an important strain on the right these days, thinking about the Proud Boys who are pivoting around the assertion that there is a feminist threat that is undermining their good white girls from becoming good white mothers, mm-hmm. carrying good white babies.
I hope so.
But of course, they see feminism as being a threat to that order. That it's when their good white girls go to college and start reading Angela Davis and bell hooks that is directly counter to what their vision for how these women will grow up and become mothers and wives. It's incongruent. So I bring this up just to say that when we say far right, we're talking about a sort of amalgamation of different strains. Generally, they're under the question of police, right? The question of sort of social justice as we know it, mm-hmm. right? They see social justice as being a fraud, right? They see it as being an entryway to socialism. Mm-hmm.
1984.
They're right, by the way. By all means,
like things that reactionaries say that would be great if they were true.
Right, like are true. Right, immediately believing in social justice makes you want to actually overthrow the bourgeoisie.
Like, I hope so.
Yeah,
well, that is the goal.
We're working on it. That is the point of this show, actually. Yeah. So thank you for bringing
We've
that
all
in.
Been trained.
So I just wanted to bring that in because the threat of a growing right movement is that ideological fascists that spend a lot of time studying history, like we do, right? You're bringing up the labor movement in 1930s Germany, right? You're bringing up the foundations of policing in the American slave trade, right? Mm-hmm. This is that we study our history, so do they, mm-hmm. actually. And they very consciously follow Mussolini, mm-hmm. Pinochet, right-wing dictators and demagogues throughout history that they actually want to adopt elements of their programs from.
Yeah. And playbook.
We know that one of the most fundamental tasks that many on the right, particularly fascists, go to is what we would say is normalization, right? So while they know certainly that their ideas are absolutely abhorrent to most people, if you say to someone, even a Republican, right? A middle of the road Republican, whatever that means to you, right? Even a Fox viewer, you know, a person from the fascist movement can't just go on Fox and say, well, what I would like to do is to ethnically cleanse the country,
right?
Dissolve all unions, establish a police state, and invade other countries and put them under our rule, under the banner of Nazism. Well, that's not going to play well.
No.
So no, they don't say that, mm-hmm. right? But the program has steps.
They don't lose sight of their end goal.
So the very important for them is to normalize their groups, right? So if Patriot Prayer gets invited to City Hall to speak with Ted Wheeler, to talk our mayor, Ted Wheeler, to speak to him, and this happened, then they see that as a green light to escalate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they are escalating.
Yeah.
So no surprise there. And the point of tonight was to be a listening session where Ted Wheeler wants to hear from security members, excuse me, if only, community members. They should be the actual security of neighborhoods, but here we are. To just hear their voices, our voices. And what many felt was sheer dissatisfaction because they said, well, we've been telling you about this threat for years, years now. And when you asked them to come to the city, we told you that this is part of an escalation. So it's almost as if he's pretending that he has not been hearing these messages for years and years, where people have been warning him about the danger of this group, that they would start targeting queers in particular. Mm-hmm. And now queers are being targeted. And of course, mm-hmm. we at KBOO can't say that it's them, but the victims themselves, or try to say the survivors themselves, mm-hmm. have identified
yes.
Members of the far right, characters around Patriot Prayer, mm-hmm. cars that have been identified mm-hmm. with those members by Rose City Antifa. Thank you for all of your
yes.
Incredible research work.
Yes.
So this is an escalation.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of the listening session was, in my view, and I hope you all talk about how you felt it went once we went inside. But to me, the frustration was so clear because people felt like, I don't even want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
We are coming in to this listening session because we want to support our community members who are just now coming around to the idea of actually fighting back against police violence. And that's where they're at. That's where a lot of my listeners are at, that don't necessarily hold the same abolitionist view that you were talking about, Olivia, but they see the police violence, they see the collusion, and they're very disturbed by it. And the point is to bring them into a room so that Wheeler and the police chief, Daniel Outlaw, can listen. And it went not so well, in my view.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that you two can talk about how you felt it went once we were inside.
Yeah, AJ, how'd you feel about it?
Wow. So we start in the building with that little bit of security theater, which is just sort of like this...
Yeah.
Dips into self-parody, almost. The open up your coats, take off your hats.
Yeah.
It
was intense.
Made to go through every article of your backpack.
I have like 6 pockets in my backpack. I had to take every single thing out of my backpack.
Cause that's, you know, cause after we do that and we get into the place, then we're safe. Like
mm-hmm.
it's just like that's there's just so that go through the portal. We are in the church and they're lined up in a big panel at the front facing the crowd.
The lighting was fabulous.
It was fabulously
beautiful.
Lit.
And facing the crowd is Mayor Ted Wheeler.
Yeah.
Chief Daniel Outlaw.
And then other folks.
Daniel Outlaw's assistant and a few other police mm-hmm. officers, I believe.
Yeah. And then the MC for the evening was...
It was a member of the church, the Maranatha Church. That's where it was
right.
being held. And... yeah, it did feel like he was the MC. Actually, he reminded me a lot of Steve Harvey and the way that he was acting. And I was just like, this is not Family Feud.
Even his mannerisms.
Setting the terms for the like the terms of what we could even say or how we were supposed to say it. Like the tone was so controlled out of the
mm-hmm.
gate.
Yeah.
And it was like, what? So... We're to come here now, and the expectation is put on us, who are like dealing with our own trauma, protecting our own communities right now. But no, we have to come to you, like person who is contracted at God only knows how many thousands of dollars, like probably in 6 figures for a police chief, and tell you what the solution is.
Sure.
Can't swear on this.
Thank you.
But wow.
Mm-hmm.
Infuriating.
Yeah.
And just like, what was the point of this? Like, what am I to offer in this space?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really felt like a project on the part of Ted Wheeler and Daniel Outlaw and the Portland police to kind of to demobilize people, right? These people are upset with us because we're friendly with Patriot Prayer, right? And as Alyssa pointed out before, I understand the argument that it's logistical and we were talking about on the way here how even some organizing groups utilize the role of a police liaison who will communicate with police, who we see as antithetical to our own goals. But these texts specifically are not, they are extremely friendly, past the point of any kind of liaison role. And on top of that,
He was organizing.
Yeah.
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 And on top of that, if we understand the police is inherently violent and it's inherently racist, then we know that this is very much usual, especially very usual for Portland police, if you look at the history of Portland police. I felt like a way to demobilize, because like they're saying we did this thing that people are upset about. This is very normal for our police force. People are upset, they're protesting, they're rallying. Let's get them all into a room and pretend like we're listening to them. And let's tone police them. Let's add in like these kind of respectability politics. Mm. They talked a lot about not using stereotypes, which felt very coded, because it's kind of like, what stereotypes you're referring to? The people right here who are under attack are the police. So not tapping into any stereotypes we may have of the police. The tone was very controlled, and there were actual fascists in the room. And so not only is it demobilizing people, bringing people in for a listening session, but you're actually allowing the very people who are kind of who are being questioned, who are being called racist and white supremacists, who you're communicating with, they're allowed to share the space too. And it's equalizing people who are upset that the police are conspiring with white supremacists, equalizing them with those white supremacists, sure, whose goals are to do violence against people of color, against queer people, for the benefit of their program, which Alyssa previously laid out. And that is a farce. That doesn't make any sense. And it just felt like, yeah. I don't believe it's possible for us to negotiate with the police. And it was really funny that they kept asking us for solutions, because people in the room had made their ideas of solutions very clear.
In earnest. It was incredible. It broke my heart, because I know it's going to fall on... engage those ideas. They just want you to say them. So that hopefully you actually won't enact them.
People could have come in there with 100-page document which laid out policies and reforms.
Some people do. Shout out Dan Handelman. Dan Handelman is a policymaker and has offered many things that the city community gets ignored all the time. Shout out Dan Handelman.
So when people do offer these solutions, right, they're ignored. The demands were clear, right? People were saying hand over this position to Joanne Hartnesty, and stop conspiring and talking to Patriot Prayer. Mm-hmm. It really is that simple. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, we have a lot more work to do than like a one night listening session. Mm-hmm. And they just had this extreme amount of disdain for everybody in the room, especially Danielle Outlaw, which it's amazing to me how people in positions like hers and her herself, how much disdain you can have for the people that you are supposedly trying to keep safe, right? These should be people who you should be crying, right? If you see your job as overseeing the safety of this community, and you have people in here saying you're perpetuating violence against these different communities, and you yourself are a Black woman, right? Ideally, you should be crying. You should be so upset that you failed these people. But she just... She actually treated the crowd like they were children, because they were upset. And that tone policing and those respectability politics are always used for that purpose, right? To throw this idea of like, we're all here together, and we all have the same ideas, and we all have the same goals, and we all need to respect each other, and use that to kind of obfuscate the fact that there are actual power dynamics at play that include oppression and violence, and that should supersede any like basic human respect. I'm using air quotes, like basic human respect that we should have for each other, because it's a farce. It's not real. You have the power dynamics of the police and the community that they oppress, and you have actual Nazis that they support in the room with us. And that's supposed to, the fact that that's supposed, the idea that that's supposed to be an environment where a productive conversation about what community safety looks like and solutions to our issues can take place is ridiculous.
So I want to also bring in the question of neutrality, because what we, right, me, Olivia, AJ, all of the listeners, are meant to believe as true is that the police and the government simply sort of are there to look over all of the internal spats and differences in daily life of people in the name of safety. Except it's complicated because there actually is a ruling order. And we call it a democracy because technically you vote in representatives. Mm-hmm. But the hope of people being able to demand and receive a dignified way of life as a right of life is something that is absolutely not on the table.
It's unknown to the system.
So that there are people who die of exposure, who freeze to death because there is not shelter. Mm-hmm. The idea that someone would put forward an alternative and say, wait a minute, what I would like is for everyone who is born and is alive, is sentient, yeah, right? Because of that, you will not be homeless. Mm-hmm. On a most basic and fundamental level, you will not go without food. You will not go without education. You will not go without the basic necessities for survival. Mm-hmm. That's actually not something that any politician is putting forward. I think it's very important to note. And that is because the class war, if you will, if you use that language, I do, has lost. The workers have lost. And generally, it is understood that there is a primacy, more than a privileging, a primacy of capital, of people who have enough money to invest in buildings that are meant to keep you, me, the listeners, out. That is the fundamental social contract that the police are hired to enforce. That it has infinitely less to do with interpersonal conflict and violence and everything to do with protecting property rights, yeah, as opposed to human rights. Police do not enforce human rights. Police enforce property rights. And I think that is a very important distinction that often gets obfuscated. Mm-hmm. But when we can, we should interrupt it. Mm-hmm. And we should be able to say, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Because the language of safety constantly gets deployed and accepted by most that the police are there to keep us safe. And I think it's important for people to think critically about that and be able to raise disagreements. That if it was about safety, if they were there to protect our safety, then actually all of the building blocks that would make us safe as people and as communities would be afforded to us. And they're not. In fact, they are explicitly denied to us, which is why we have to sell our labor in the first place. Mm-hmm. Some guy from Germany said that.
Carl.
So
Car.
So I wanted to bring that in. So if now we can move to why we left, and how we left.
Yeah. I mean, we just left, and then Alyssa talked to a woman that was giving her grief earlier. We just got up and left. And we left because, I mean,
it wasn't just us. People were leaving in droves.
Yeah, people were leaving. We decided we were going to leave at the same time that other comrades of ours were going to leave. I ran into a friend on the way out. He happened to also be leaving. And he was like, I'm leaving. I'm just letting you know. And I was like, I'm leaving too. It was that we felt like our job was done and that we had done good work today. we had the rally beforehand, which was an actual, right, equal platform to kind of put forward the message of our ideas and why we were there, to say, to make our demands clear, and to say that, right, policing is inherently violent, to understand that what's happening with Portland Police and Patriot Prayer is normal, is to be expected within the system that we live under, and that we need to continue to fight back, and to not accept it, and to not believe that they just have our interest at heart. I overheard a listen talking in the news, and right, I think this is very important. It's not about convincing these people. It's not about convincing Ted Wheeler or convincing Danielle Outlaw that what they're doing is wrong. They understand it to be wrong, and even if they don't, they're interested in protecting their own interests. Mm-hmm. It's about forcing the hand of people who oppress us. Convincing can only happen when you're on equal ground with somebody. When there's a power dynamic where somebody is oppressing you and you would like to stop that oppression, it takes force and it takes developing power.
General strength.
Yeah, and we hope to develop that power through creating connections with other people who are like us, other workers, other people who are being oppressed. So we had done that. We felt that we had done our part today to encourage that with the rally. It was good. I showed up very late. There were a lot of people there. People were excited. There was a long line going out of the church. There were lots and lots of people who had heard our message. And once we got in, that dynamic was completely, as I talked about before, disrupted and just demolished, because now we're sitting basically begging to two people who we already understand don't have our best interests at heart, and that's why we're here. Now we're sitting in front of two people who we already understand do not have our best interests at heart, and that's why we're here. And it just devolved into chaos, which is fine. I was having a great time. but it did not
a Roman circus.
It did not serve to mobilize people, to galvanize people, to empower people. It was very disempowering, which is exactly the opposite of what we're trying to do. And to even humor the idea that Danielle Outlaw and Ted Wheeler, your mayor and mine, are going to sit there and listen to us and respect us and say, you know what? We are doing wrong. We're going to go back to the drawing board and we're going to change this. First of all, they don't even have the power to do that. They don't have the power to do that because they themselves are working within a system that is much larger than them, right? They've simply come into positions, jobs, roles in a system that is already inherently oppressive. And like they play into that. They accept that. They're not good people. I do not like them. To humor that idea, to sit there and beg them to listen to us, does nothing. And that's why we left.
AJ, I just want to acknowledge an aside that you brought up when we talked about transforming this. You said two words that I love so much. So please expand. General strike.
General strike. So this is, I think, kind of in the DNA of the IWW, like that we are building.
The industrial workers of the world.
Mm-hmm. We organize industrially. Like we're not building craft unions to like get very, very, very specific contracts just for our own benefit.
Right.
We are organizing as a class. And when our class is organized enough, then we will stop production. And when we all stop at the same time, then we can break the back of the system that is killing us otherwise.
Absolutely.
What's been interesting within the last month has been that the general strike phrase has been like uttered by the AFA president, the Association of Flight Attendants, which is CWA affiliated. But
stop the shutdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was only in like a couple of unions that were semi-coordinated.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've been, I think, through like 60 years of the National Labor Relations Act.
Which is
the law that governs most unions in the United States. Has been set up to defang and to like give us, not to isolate unions into seeing themselves as like disjointed and separate and apart. Mm. I think that the AFA president, whose union is not governed by the National Labor Relations Act, it's governed by the Railroads Act, which was set up basically to make it impossible to strike. You have to jump through a phone book of regulations in order to strike under the National Railroads Labor Act.
Who cares if it's legal?
The AFA president, again, from a union with no history of militant, like, even strikes, like what we generally think of as like common economic strikes, that was the union that said the word first, or the phrase first, general strike. I think there's a resurgence of that militant unionism, and it's from surprising places. And that makes me kind of hopeful.
Well, it's because people see that it's working.
Yeah.
West Virginia won their demands, what, in like a day?
Denver.
Right.
Oakland teachers. All of these formerly professions where people understood that you might not win the battle, so it's not worth it to even try to fight. And that's been something that has had a stranglehold for a very long time on the labor movement. I mean, AJ Say Amen, you know, where people work under the assumption that whatever is being offered is all that's there. And very quickly, people are realizing that that's not true. And there have been more strikes in 2018 than in like decades past. People are learning that when you fight, you win. And that's very inspiring. So I want to again loop back to the question of people withholding their labor as a way to shut down the system, because it is not simply us existing and living our daily lives that makes the system reproduce itself, but it's actually the labor that you provide to your boss. It will have incredible spillover effects if you go on strike. It's not as simple as this might hurt my boss and twist their arm. No, it the reverberations of strike action go far beyond the employee-employer relationship. So I hope people consider that going forward, because I have been disheartened, to be honest, with the lack of action taken by unions and people across the labor movement around this question of growing white nationalism, and even the Black Lives Matter movement before it. I thought for sure there would be some strike action or even demonstrations at the job, some more clear mobilizations even by unions. And that there wasn't was extremely concerning to me. And I look forward to seeing what kind of effect this strike wave will have on the potential for what we might call a political strike, where workers band together not for a better contract at work, but a better society itself. So now going forward, I want to plug an event that's hosted by a group called Pop Mob, or Popular Mobilization. I have talked about them before on the show, and I think
they're
that their praxis is incredible, because what they seek to establish is what they call everyday anti-fascism, where the caricature of our comrades in Black Bloc, who, by the way, mask themselves because they know full well that being in clear defiance of police rules will mean that the police will target you. They will take pictures of you. They will use their own databases to find out who you are, where you live, who you're related to, right? Which is why they mask up at all. But everyday anti-fascism and the praxis of Pop Mob wants to normalize anti-fascism as a default, actually, political orientation. So they seek to establish everyday people, you, me, Olivia, all of our listeners, to become strident anti-fascists that do work to undermine the fascist creep, as we call it. So they're doing an event on March 2nd at PICA. Mm. It's at 15 Northeast Hancock Street. And it's going to be an all-day event. And there's going to be workshops, safety supplies that are going to be given out, many discussions. It's family friendly. They're actually encouraging children to come with their parents and learn about how, as families, they can work together to strengthen their communities. And I just wanted to alert people to that. Again, that's March 2nd at PICA. So what I would like to see is an acknowledgement, even by people on our side, that this fight will not be easy. And I'm just talking about the immediate demand of the mayor turning over the police commissioner's seat to Hardesty, which is not tantamount to police abolition, by the way.
It is absolutely.
It's a very, very small demand that has wide popularity. And yet, if we do not escalate, it will be a demand that dies.
Yeah.
And things will go back to normal. We will all be angry. We will all say, don't you remember when? And that would be righteous. However, the police commissioner's seat will not go to Hardesty. And the officer will not experience anything close to restorative justice.
Oh, his union has filed a grievance for him, though. Just you need to put that out there.
Oh dear. Can you say more about that?
I just think it's like an amazing, like, this is the trappings of a grievance procedure was never meant to protect somebody to collude with a fascist. Mm-hmm. Like, that's repugnant. Mm-hmm. But because, like, oh yeah, police unions, I've been normalized. Then it gets this great, oh yeah, of course we can use a grievance procedure to say that this discipline is unfair, and the questioning these texts is unfair.
Yeah.
That's just not, like, that's supposed to be a problem solving mechanism in, like, workplace disagreements around a contract, not this kind of thing. And again, that's like the difference. It's a union in the strictest contractual sense. It is not part of the labor movement.
I love that point that you made earlier. That makes a lot of things very clear.
So I'm sorry to leave people on such a glum note, but here we are.
This is where
I hope that people take seriously getting involved in this fight. And if you do, I'll see you on the picket line. Thank you, everyone. This is Alyssa Parai, your friendly neighborhood agitator. This was Olivia Pace and AJ Mendoza as my guests. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you.
I'll see you all next week. The struggle continues.
K-Boot Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd at the Milagro Theater in Portland. La Segura is a Central American cautionary folktale of a young, beautiful woman whom philandering men encounter on their way back home. Her beauty decays into a horror that drives the men mad. The play tells the story of a beautiful woman who was haunted by the specter of La Segura and takes a hard look at Costa Rican values, including ambition, hypocrisy, and follows themes of machismo, vanity, and narcissism. Again, that's La Segura, running February 7th to March 2nd on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Arts for All Ages, a benefit to deepen intergenerational roots, on Monday, February 25th, from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. at the Oregon Public House in Portland. The Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective is Charity of the Day on February 25th at the Oregon Public House. The Art for All Ages benefit features music groups, activities, and games throughout the afternoon, followed by an all-ages jam session and an evening performance by Green Mountain Guild. Again, that's Arts for All Ages, a benefit to deepen intergenerational roots on Monday, February 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. at the Oregon Public House, 700 Northeast Deakum Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Kicked around since the start.
And the time is 8 p.m. here in the Pacific Northwest. And my name is Ender, and I'm your favorite KBOO person by far. Yeah! Woo! Self-esteem checked. So, sorry for yelling. I am here to welcome you into another 2 hours of my show, Squirrels Know, where I would play random stuff. And yes, I focus on pop, hip-hop, and anything that's really actually relevant to my generation. Gen Z, anyone Gen Z representing here in the room? Okay, sweet. So let's start off by playing the intro for all of you. Before that, I just want to say to anybody out there, all of you guys that follow the Jewish faith,